129. Do you know what that is?
129.
Yeah, that was the time my dog woke me up this morning to go out to the bathroom.
Are you serious?
129 a.m.
You know what I do when my dog wakes me up?
What?
I pretend I'm asleep and Caroline has to get up. Take him out.
Caroline, if you're listening, gig is up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, 129.
I have a feeling I've got a punch in the ribs in my future.
Yeah, yeah. You're hoping it's the ribs. Hey, listen, 129 in the morning, our dog's like 15 years old and like very close to meeting Jesus, which if I'm honest, I don't think he's going to meet Jesus.
So. Does his breath smell like he's dying on the inside?
Yes.
Yeah, I have a dog like that.
But he almost met him this morning. Yeah, that was pretty rough. Well, we're back, me and Jesse Crow here today, and continuing our Western theology and this life on the trail. We kind of talked about this briefly the other day, just with all the different encounters that you can have out on the trail. I threw this idea out to you of asking, and we didn't share, you know, with each other anything other than just this topic to kick off with. Have you ever had a celebrity encounter? Have you ever met a celebrity?
What level celebrity are we talking about?
Any. I mean, I've met a local celebrity
yeah. encounter.
Who is that?
Pam Huff.
Pam Huff.
Remember Pam Huff?
Yeah, from the news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're from Alabama, you know Pam Huff is.
In fact, you know my mom really well. But when I was growing up, she had one of those monster-ass like camcorders, you know, that looked like a news, you know, in the 80s.
It's one you prop up on your shoulder.
Yeah, yeah. You had to wear like a back brace to hold the thing.
And made the conk conk sound when you put the tape in there.
My dad was like, here comes Pam Huff.
So, you know, Pam Huff looks has a striking resemblance to Aunt Bee from Andy Griffith.
Yeah. Which, consequently, they said she wasn't a very nice lady.
Pam Huff?
Well, Aunt Bee.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that.
I think Pam Huff is nice.
Hey, here's a fun fact about Aunt Bee. Mm-hmm. So, now, none of this is verified, okay? This is just shit that I've heard, mm-hmm. okay? So, it could be bullshit. I don't know.
Right.
But she was a cat lady. Did you know that?
Yes. Yeah, no, that's
true. She had a lot of cats.
True. Yeah, this is true.
You know, and she ended up moving to where, North, South Carolina, wherever they mm-hmm. recorded there.
Yeah, it was Mount Pilot.
Mount
Pilot.
But she ended up moving there because she fell in love with the landscape there, and she died alone with a bunch of cats.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that some of the cats, stray cats that are around that area,
mm-hmm.
that they think their lineage.
Man, come on now.
That's what I heard.
Come on. One
of Aunt Bee's cats. You may have a great 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 granddaughter or grandson cat. If you get one from Aunt that area of Aunt Bee.
Just look and see if they're pretentious or something like that. Maybe that shows. I remember reading something. I don't remember if it was Andy and Don Knotts like tried to even go visit her. Maybe it was Ron Howard. It was somebody.
I think it was Andy.
Yeah, she wouldn't let them in.
Yeah. I think her house was gross.
Yeah. Well, it was just her and a bunch of cats, you know. Yeah. But anyway.
So,
all right, so how did the encounter with Pam Huff go? Was she nice?
Well, I was, you know, I was like, I think I was 19 years old, and I was at the Galleria with some of my friends, and I walked by, and I guess she was with one of her kids. I don't know if she even has kids. She was with a teenage girl, and I walked by, and I saw her, like, double take, and I went, Pam Huff, and she looks up at me, and I went, are you reporting live from the Galleria?
Yeah.
And she rolled her eyes and walked away.
That's funny.
And well, I, you know what?
Yeah.
In her defense, I'd have done the same thing.
Oh, yeah, sure. I tell you a funny one. I didn't plan this one, but because I've got a pretty big celebrity I've met. It was pretty radical encounter. But one of the local ones, Taylor Hicks. You remember Taylor Hicks from American Idol?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I met him, and I shook his hand, and I just, like, I was at a blank of like what to say, and I was like, I loved you on American Idol, man. It's like, of course, that's the only place I would have known him.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was like, thanks, pal. You know, like, all right.
I never cared for Taylor Hicks.
Yeah, I liked him. I liked him. I liked the Alabama folks. We had a real gullible employee at the time that Ruben Studdard was an American Idol finalist.
Yeah.
And he had that song Flying Without Wings, and it's talking about being in love, you know, this high and stuff. And I'd ask him, I said, Mr. Sam, how the hell is he going to fly if he ain't got no wings? And he's like, man, you don't understand. He'd go and he'd just try to explain it. I was like, I just don't get it. I don't get it. The whole time it was just, you know, a gag on him. But anyway, so my big celebrity, like this is a bad encounter too.
I was about to say, Taylor Hicks couldn't have been your big celebrity.
No. Steven Seagal. Remember Steven Seagal? Have I ever told you this story?
I think I have heard the story, yeah.
So Jamie and I went to Memphis. It was just like a getaway weekend. I don't remember if it was an anniversary or whatever, but I do remember the year because this will come into the story later. It was right when YouTube like started, and I had to Google that and, you know, figure it out. It was like 2005, 2006 is when that first came out and started being a big thing. And which that's hard to believe that it's only been around that long. Feels like a lot longer. But we were staying at a very nice hotel in Memphis called the Peabody. Peabody's famous, like, you know, it's famous in Memphis is like Graceland, you know, all this stuff. Their big thing is like, it sounds weird if you've never been there, but they have these ducks that like swim in the hotel lobby thing. And they actually have like this guy that his main job is taking care of these ducks. Like he's dressed up nice and they have this red carpet that these ducks walk on and go on this elevator and they stay up on the roof and you can go up there later and see them, but they bring them down. They march on. It's like wild. Okay. Very famous hotel.
Huh?
Well, it's old, obviously a lot older hotel, but we were staying there.
How about those ducks? Taste amazing.
Yeah, they probably do. They've been fed really well, but we're walking downtown Memphis area, you know. We leave the hotel and we're just going to go grab a bite to eat, come back, you know, come back to the hotel. Well, when we leave out of the hotel, lo and behold, Steven Seagal, I mean, very recognizable, you know, he's not trying to hide who he is. You know, he's got all his like Indian like looking jewelry that he wears, you know, the turquoise and silver. Yeah, that guy. He's propped up, you know, against the thing, like one leg back, like he's the Marlboro man, like real cool, you know, thinks he's real cool. And we walk up to him. Jamie's like, man, that's a, you know, she didn't even know the guy's name. She just recognized him from TV. I said, yeah, Steven Seagal. And she said, that would be neat to like get a picture with him or whatever, you know, that we, you know, encountered him. I said, well, let's go ask. I kid you not. We walk up. I wish the listeners could like see this. But we walk up and his handler steps like guarding him. Right in the thing.
I thought he knew karate. Yeah. Why does he need a handle?
Come on. I'm calling BS on that too. Yeah. I don't think he knows anything. If you watch videos like that little slapping stuff he does. Yeah. No, come on, man. But anyway, so the handler steps out and I walk up and says, you know, just wondering if we could get a picture, you know, with Mr. Seagal. And the handler turns around, looks at Steven Seagal. Steven, I swear to God, this is where I said I wish they could see. Looks us up and down and just shakes his head no. Right in front of us. Like, doesn't say a word, doesn't address us, didn't like, hey, I'm busy, I'm whatever. So, man, we walk. I said, that's fine. No problem. We walk off. Man, I'm pissed. I mean, I'm sitting at dinner. I'm all out with my wife. And it's like, Steven Seagal, I tell you. It's like, I don't even like that guy. Like, why did you make me walk up and get a picture? So, or try to get a picture. So, then, you know, we eat our dinner, everything. We go back. He's standing in the same exact spot. Same exact spot. I mean, it's not like he was too busy to take a picture. Like, he's been there for over an hour.
Yeah.
You know, we've eaten a full dinner, walked, all this stuff. I tell Jamie, I said, I'm going to walk up and see if he'll take a picture with us. She said, please don't. Like, don't. And I was like, no. Like, dude's going to take a picture with us. Like, I'm telling you. Like, he's not busy. Like, whatever. I walk up, talk to the handler. I said, hey, can we get that picture now with Steven? Steven looks us up and down again and shakes his head no one more time. I mean, just like, oh, it got all over me. So here's where I go back to the YouTube thing. Standing right beside Steven Seagal was an orange parking cone. And I felt with my cat-like reflexes and ability, I told Jamie, I said, if I could sneak behind him and get that cone on his head, and we were able to post this to YouTube, I said, million hits.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, easy. A million hits. I didn't do it. I didn't try. I was afraid of the karate. But I did give him a parting shot. Do you remember what it is? It was the only thing my sarcastic brain could think of in the moment because he was egotistical. I knew there was some pride involved in this.
Yeah.
I said to his handler, loud enough for Steven Seagal to hear, I said, man, that's a bummer because I loved that dude in Walker, Texas Ranger. That was the best I could come up with. So, Steven Seagal, if you're listening, you suck. If you encounter Steven Seagal, just tell him, yeah, I heard about this guy in Alabama. But, yeah, Walker, Texas Ranger. There you go.
Well, you know, I think the fact that, which if you're listening to this, you need to go to Spotify and look up Steven Seagal's Jamaican song.
Yes.
I think that's payback enough.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty rough.
That's anyway. Pretty terrible.
Yeah. So I've had a few others. I'm looking over here. We have a not many podcast places have this, but a cardboard cut out of Dale Earnhardt. I met Dale Earnhardt one time. Several Alabama players. But, yeah, that was by far my worst. So, yeah, not a fan of Steven Seagal. So I know you didn't plan for that when you tuned in, but, yeah.
There you go.
We hate Steven Seagal. So now we'll talk about Jesus and his love and mercy, even for jerks like Steven Seagal. It can happen. So
now go watch Mark for Death and watch him slap some Jamaicans around.
That's right. So if you've been with us, we've been talking about this book, Western Theology by Wes Seeliger. We've said it every time, very much our speed. It is each chapter is about 6 pages and has some cartoons in there as well that was drawn by the author. Going back to the old Western times, settlers and pioneers, and we discovered this from Brennan Manning's message, "The Unsettling the Settlers." Again, encourage if you haven't listened to that, you know, go back and do that. But each chapter is kind of compared and contrast settler theology, pioneer theology. Obviously, this is chapter 3. If you haven't listened to chapter 1 and 2, would encourage that. But just a quick recap of that: chapter 1. Settler theology, really, it addressed the church, compared it to a courthouse, and then in pioneer theology, the covered wagon. Chapter 2, that got into talking about who God is. Settler theology had him as the mayor, pioneer theology as the trail boss. And so chapter 3, we look at Jesus. Before we even get into that, what do you think, Jesse, like some common misconceptions when people hear the name Jesus?
The first thing is that he's weak. Mm-hmm. That's thinking back to my childhood, Jesus was weak and kind of indifferent, mm-hmm. Passive, pale.
Yeah.
You know, it was a very lifeless image. Not a lot of masculinity.
Yeah.
It's funny because it's like I look back in my childhood growing up, and the people that led the churches that I was at, mm-hmm. were that way.
Yeah.
They were weak men, sort of pale, mm-hmm. kind of didn't get out in the sun enough. No right. Calluses on their hands.
Yeah.
It was almost like they were conforming to the image of this false Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
The pictures on the walls of, you know, I saw a picture yesterday,
mm-hmm.
on Facebook, which I typically don't get on Facebook. I got on there to look for Marketplace. What was I looking for? Maybe somebody has what I need. Oh, I was looking for an old camper.
Yeah.
I just got on there. Every now and then I get on there to look, see.
Sometimes, which housekeeping matters. I sent you a camper this morning on Marketplace.
Oh, so. Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Shout out Marketplace.
So I got on there and I immediately kind of hit my thumb, make the feed go up to see, mm-hmm. who's posting what before I hit the Marketplace thing. And one of them was a picture of a church, I won't say the name, mm-hmm. that I used to go to as a teenager. Mm-hmm. My parents were members there, and they had this big picture behind the pulpit,
mm-hmm.
of one of those Jesus with a robe and a staff and a lamb, you know.
Yeah
they still got that same damn picture,
mm-hmm.
and standing in front of the picture was the same pastor.
Wow.
p- pale and hadn't been out. And I'm like, dude, go get some vitamin D, man.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
You look like you've never been out. Look like you've sat in that study of yours a little too long. Yeah. But yeah, like that's kind of that image. It's this weak, frail.
Yeah.
Impotent.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah.
Yeah. Bradley and I talked about this yesterday, and I'll address this, but we had a moment at Southside Sunday when I was teaching that kind of even talked about this. We didn't even really think about the Western theology part of it. We were talking about the portrayal of Jesus in, like, paintings. And I was asking him, and I think he'd seen it, but we pulled it up and was just looking at Da Vinci's Last Supper painting, mm-hmm. you know, where they're all at the long table, you know, brought up controversy at the Olympics this year, all that, you know, stuff. But anyway, not just Jesus, but every one of the disciples, just all very feminine looking, white, you know, pretty much. Yeah. Like we were like picking out one disciple that possibly represented and looked maybe Middle Eastern, like maybe, but the rest were, you know, all very, very white looking. And that's what Wes says in this, that Jesus in settler theology is resembled as a sheriff. His description, he said, tall, blonde, handsome, soft. And, you know, this is what I said Sunday at Southside. You know, we have a very, not just racially, you know, but in all facets of life, very diverse crowd, you know, at Southside.
Mm.
And, it's funny, you know, anytime, even though we all love each other, we're walking through life together and worship together as a family, it's funny, anytime politics or race gets mentioned, it's a little tense moment, yeah. I think, just and the setting, you know, won't get lost on us. I mean, we're in downtown Birmingham where a lot of racial tension has existed for years. We pray and hope that God is using Southside to break, you know, some of that stereotype, because we do. We have a very mixed crowd that, mm-hmm. that gather together and worship and see no difference. But I just kind of did the Ron Burgundy major news, breaking news here. I have a major announcement. I was like, in case you haven't noticed, there are black people in this crowd. And there are white people.
Mm.
And I wasn't going Red House, you know.
Red House.
Go ahead.
Where white people and black people can come worship Jesus.
Or buy furniture.
And Hispanics, too. If you don't, if you haven't seen the Red House commercial, you need to stop right now and go to YouTube.
Really, really all of Rhett and Link's commercials were pretty good.
Yeah.
Butt drugs. Remember that one? Plenty of parking in the rear. Anyway, but when I mentioned that, I brought it up for this point. I said, because, you know, Jesus was truly a man's man. I mean, you think carpenter before power tools, like calluses on calluses. We talked about the flipping the tables, you know, that it wasn't some plastic, you know, lifetime made table, that it was a wooden table, you know, and all of these things. But I said, the reason I brought up the black or white thing is because, typically, what we've seen in white churches is that white, pale, you know, sissified Jesus. And then if you go to maybe some traditional black churches, you see a picture painted of Jesus as, you know, a black individual. And it's like, they're both wrong. You know, he was Middle Eastern. He was a Jewish man and all of these things. But it's like that picture always gave to me, the one that I grew up seeing, of this very effeminate Jesus. It was like all he was good for, it's like he died on a cross, but like we sanitized that to the point that it didn't take a real man to go through that.
Mm-hmm.
That he was just sitting waiting on the next little lamb to come by that he could just put on his lap and just pet the lamb, you know. Right, not saying that Jesus wouldn't pet lambs, but you get what I'm saying. It was the lamb over the shoulder kind of thing like that. But I found this interesting, and let's talk on this for just a second. In Wes's description of Jesus as the sheriff, not only the description of tall, blonde, handsome, soft blue eyes, neatly trimmed beard, all these things, He says this, the sheriff sent by the mayor, and reminder, that was last week, you know, that God is viewed as the mayor, the one that keeps the rules. But the sheriff was sent by the mayor to enforce rules. Mm. What do you think about that idea of Jesus, that he is just enforcing the rules that God laid on us or something like that? Is there, surely there's got to be more to Jesus than just enforcing rules, right?
Well, you know, if the Christian life is just simply following rules, mm-hmm. then it's pretty easy.
Yeah.
You know, if obviously there are people out there who are not going to follow rules and have struggle, but the average person, they're not going to cheat on their wife.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to go murder someone. Right. They're not going to, you know, they can probably get through life without lying at least a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think it, to just simply have a list of rules to follow does not require intimacy with God,
mm-hmm.
which is what we were created for.
Yeah.
That's why Jesus, on his famous Sermon on the Mount, he turned all that on its head.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I know you've heard it said, you don't murder people, but I'm telling you, if you hate someone in your own heart, you've already murdered them,
right?
You know, in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with adultery. You know, you've heard it said, don't sleep with your neighbor's wife. Well, mm-hmm. I'm telling you, even if you're thinking about it, you're guilty.
Right.
And Jesus, see, here's the problem with that. A lot of people that are rule following and think the Christian life is just about rule following, they think that Jesus has, by saying that, he's given them a subcategory of rules to follow now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, so I can't even think about it. Okay, so I need to get to work on my thought life.
Mm.
I can't even hate somebody. Okay, Jesus wasn't giving you more rules to follow.
Right.
Jesus was simply saying, you're all screwed
mm-hmm.
when it comes to rule keeping.
Right.
He wasn't saying, let me just give you rule one and then
yeah.
a sub yeah. A, B, and
yeah.
C.
1A.
Yeah, 1A, 1B. He was saying, look, you think you're the Pharisees, you and the Sadducees or whatever, you think you're above these people
mm-hmm.
because you pay your tithe and because you don't sleep with your neighbor's wife and because you don't murder.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here to tell you, you all are without excuse, as Paul said.
Mm-hmm.
You're all in the same boat.
Yeah.
You're all sinners in need of a savior. So he was saying, rule following doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work. It's intimacy with God leads and can lead to keeping the law.
Yeah.
Through the power of the Spirit, through the intimacy with God. And that looks like understanding why you hate your neighbor.
Yeah.
Understanding why you can't keep your eyes off your neighbor's wife.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding why you covet other people's what they have in their life.
Yeah,
you know, and those things are resolved through intimacy. They're not resolved through simply, well, I didn't covet today,
mm-hmm.
you know, but you haven't dealt with the problem.
Right.
All of that happens in the realm, I guess,
mm-hmm.
of intimacy.
Yeah.
You know, God's requiring more of us, not in terms of keeping the rules. He's requiring more of us in terms of walking closer, leaning in, being rooted in him,
mm-hmm.
finding deeper, meaningful relationship with him. Yeah. You know?
Well, that walking with it goes, and you talk about this often and do a good job with it, the rich young ruler vibe of, I feel like the church is, and we both could say we've been this same guy, so it's not, we're not pointing fingers. I think we said that from the trailer to the beginning episodes, that we're not doing this podcast because we got it figured out. We're doing
right.
it because we don't. You know,
oh,
we're
absolutely.
Just talking
yeah.
things out.
Yeah.
And by the way, I know you can't tell out there, we do zero preparation for this. Like, it's
yeah, we really don't.
We have an idea of where we're going. We write
can I,
down.
Can I make a confession?
Yeah.
I didn't even read ahead this week.
See there? I mean, we're just, we give you the honest truth here.
I'm sorry.
He has read it before, though.
I have, but I didn't even know what we were doing when I walked in here.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it, is it's honestly, Jesse and I hunt together. We do a lot of life together, and like, these are some of the same conversations we have when a mic's not in front of our face. Mm-hmm. Like, we just talk about life.
That was the goal for this.
Yeah.
Because we, you know...
There's enough edited stuff out there.
Oh, my gosh. Life is too damn edited.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to hear...
If you go back a couple episodes, we let Jesse go pee, and we just kept going.
And that may happen again today.
Well, you have had a bunch of coffee, but let's not let it ruin the podcast. but the rich young ruler vibe is what I say in churches. Yeah, you may not be rich, you may not be a ruler, but that wasn't even the part of the story. The real part of the story was Jesus knew what was blocking that young man's heart from truly being all in.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've said this when I've taught this passage, is like, I can almost picture that guy in my mind of like, you know, when he asked Jesus, what do I have to do? You know, right. And Jesus, well, have you kept this? And he goes down, and I can almost picture the guy bowing up. It's like, man, I've done all those things. Like, yeah. I'm in.
Yeah.
And he says, well, but this one thing you lack. And it's not a prescription for me or you to sell everything we own. That may not be, you know, our God or our calling. But it's like when Jesus gives him that, you know, then the countenance changes. It says he walked away dejected, because it's like, I can't do that. But that was that walking with, you know, that's missing in so many people's lives.
You know what's interesting?
Yeah.
Jesus says, one thing you lack. Mm-hmm. He never tells him what it was.
Mm. Yeah.
Because He never said out loud what it was.
Sure. Yeah.
But that tells me that in that interaction, Jesus and that man knew exactly what Jesus was talking. That's what I love about Jesus. Mm-hmm. It's like, he don't give a shit who's listening, mm-hmm. if they get it or not.
Right.
You know, I think who wrote that? Was that John or is that?
I don't know. Is that Matthew? That's in several of the Gospels. Yeah.
Well, you know, picture his disciples going, you know, this is a personal interaction that Jesus had with an individual,
mm-hmm.
but I feel the need to write it down.
Mm-hmm.
And they write that out.
By the way, don't you love on The Chosen, Matthew's character? He's always got the tablet out and like, I need to write this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But
we hadn't told you, go watch The Chosen. If you haven't watched The Chosen,
you got to watch it, man. But he never says what that thing was. This one thing you lack.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep going back to this interaction.
Yeah.
We went into that interaction almost every episode, mm-hmm. because I think that interaction sums up that book.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. It's the difference between this settler mindset of, let me get everything in a row, let me get all the rules laid out, let me establish this sort of neat little world in my mind.
So, you know, stop right there, because I want to read you this quote that I got from the book. All right. Okay. It goes back to your talk a couple of weeks back, which, by the way, great, great job.
Thank you.
You were talking about the two kingdoms and this, you know, need that we have as individuals for security, right? Like the job, the money, the food, you know, all this stuff. Listen to what he says about the sheriff. The sheriff's job is to save the settlers by offering security.
Mm.
Isn't that what we long for? Like, we really do as humans, even those that are followers in Christ, like the wildness of being called to adventure and the unpredictability of God, like, sometimes just really hits us at the core of like, no, but I want what's safe. Mm. You know, I want security, but like, ultimately we don't.
Right.
But it's just that struggle that John Eldridge says, like, we're spiritual amphibians, like, in this world, but also in the next, and, you know, just the kingdoms and all this stuff that's at play. But what is that need? Like, what is that thing we have for security?
You know what? When I was doing that talk that day, you know, I was kind of going at it from this angle of, you know, we say we want God to meet these needs, like, mm-hmm. the need for security, the need for sustenance, mm-hmm. the need for, you know, the things we love, things we desire. Mm-hmm. But what we really want through them things is something else, you know, through and I said that up mm-hmm. there, you know, we want security. We really want to know that we're taken care of,
right?
You know, sustenance, same deal. We want to know we're taken care of. desire, we want to really know that God is watching us and knows what we love and knows what we desire. And he's going to make provision for that. You know, all these things, like there's a deeper, but when I was standing up there, God whispered longing. Mm. Talk about longing.
Yeah.
And I kind of deviated a little bit. I didn't plan that.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that part of my issue, and I think a lot of people out there, is we haven't gotten acquainted with our longing. Mm. There's something beneath the needs, you know, the desire we have to have our needs met, physical, mental, emotional, all these different needs that we have that we ask God for. Why isn't God giving me enough money? Why isn't God giving me enough security? But there's something deeper beneath that,
mm-hmm.
and that's longing.
Yeah.
Because the longing, and this is where we're talking about the difference between keeping the rules and the difference between intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
The longing, I just started thinking about this. God just started speaking this to me recently. The longing is for a deep fellowship
mm-hmm.
with the Trinity. And I say that because, you know, John, speaking of John Eldridge again, he just re-released a book mm-hmm. that started his whole ministry.
Yeah.
And I went back and started reading it.
I want to as well. Is that Sacred Romance?
Yeah. It's not a marriage book.
Yeah.
When Mike Skelton handed me that book 20 years ago.
Mike.
And he got to read this guy. So I got the book and I looked and I said, this is a marriage book. I don't want to read. I don't know.
I got to hunt with one Mike Skelton this weekend.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Met his son and his granddaughter.
That's so awesome.
We love you, Mike.
Yeah, we love you, buddy. But anyway, he gave me that book. He said, man, you got to read this. And I remember thinking, what is this? Hey, you need to get married and you need to start reading this.
Right.
But I read it and it just changed.
So this is pre-married,
yeah.
Jesse.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I had no intention of getting married at that time in my life. Well, that changed spiritually. That changed the trajectory of my life,
mm-hmm.
that book. And I began to ask questions and understand God in a different way,
mm-hmm.
that God wanted this deep level of intimacy with me as his son. And, John says in the book, when I went back and read it, when I went hunting a few weeks by myself,
mm-hmm.
that's all I did. I listened to that book. Seven, yeah. eight, 12 hours worth of reading mm-hmm. I did in like a couple of days.
Yeah.
Just a book on tape, just listened to it.
Yeah.
And it was so crazy. I was laying in my tent.
Man, that's why you didn't see any deer.
I guess so. I was laying in my tent, and it's like 1 a.m, I'm listening to this book, and the coyotes started going crazy.
Mm.
It was such a weird experience. Yeah. But anyway, he says in this book, he says when he was a kid, he used to go stay with his grandfather. And he said we would go visiting on Sundays. And we would go to friends of his granddad and his relatives. And he said I would sit there and I'd listen. And he said I remember back thinking there was this security and safety in. And he said, I guess he had words to put to it then, but now he's like thinking back, there was this security and safety in the fact that this has been going on long before me.
Mm-hmm.
And man, that struck me over since that hunting trip. And I've realized in my heart, and this may be foreign to some people listening, but I have realized in my heart that what I long for most
mm-hmm.
is to be in the company of a fellowship where it doesn't depend on me
mm-hmm.
because see rule following depends on you.
Yeah.
If you F that up,
mm-hmm.
you got to start over
mm-hmm.
and you got to earn that back.
Mm-hmm.
And if you mess it up again, you got to go back to the beginning mm-hmm. and start it all over. It depends on you.
Yeah.
You know, but this fellowship of the Trinity that's mm-hmm. been going on long before we were ever imagined, thought, or God imagined mm-hmm. this and thought of us, but
yeah.
long before time,
mm-hmm.
we get to be a part of that. And it does not depend on us, but we find provision in it. We find our desires and our deep longing
mm-hmm.
for life and goodness and adventure mm-hmm. and romance and all those things are caught up in those, in that fellowship.
Yeah.
And that just really struck me, listening to that.
Yeah.
Because it's like all this time, that deep longing, what I talked about on that, in that day, was like, that's what stirred when you, and I think that's why God, and it's just kind of a shitty thing to say, but it's like, I think that's why God sort of holds back some things from us. Mm-hmm. And it's not because he's being an asshole and doesn't want to give you mm-hmm. enough food or enough, the job with the right salary. It's not that he doesn't want you to have those things, mm-hmm. but I think he withholds things. And it's not that he doesn't provide and give us enough to survive. He does. But I think he withholds things sometimes because he's trying to awaken that longing.
Yeah.
Because that longing is the way back.
Right.
It's the way back to everything that was lost in the garden.
Yeah.
So.
That's good stuff. I tell you one thing that came to mind. And then before we do that, quick side note. Jamie says this makes me a psychopath. But one of the things I love about hunting, granted, what I'm about to say, I'm going to preface, I don't want them 50 yards from me, but I love to walk out of the woods at night, like when it's dark, you know, we've hunted, whatever, no light, and if there's a pack of, like, coyotes close by, it's so cool to me. Like, just to stand there for a sec, like, maybe a little bit of moment of boldness, but, like, just to listen. Now, granted, again, 300 yards plus is what I'm aiming for. If they're 50, I'm headlamps on, and I'm hoofing it, but which has happened before. I did that one year, walked out bow season, and I didn't have a pistol or anything, just had my bow.
Yeah.
And they were close, and I was like, this could be bad.
Well, let me just tell you this, side note.
Yeah.
Have you stayed on the property at night?
No.
You haven't done that yet?
No.
Okay, so when you stay where our camp is, mm-hmm. There is a pack of coyotes mm-hmm. that hangs out super close.
Okay.
Uncomfortably close.
Yeah. You know, Mike ran one off the other night. There was a deer hanging that we had Fabian had gotten.
Yeah.
And they had gutted it and just hung. It was cold enough. They let it hang. And Mike had, like, one really, really close to camp. So,
really?
Yeah. He ran it off.
Wow.
Yep.
Why didn't he shoot it?
Good job, Mike.
Yeah.
Anyway. But I tell you the other thing, the more important thing than hunting, this choice and this longing that you're talking about, and this I think it's God-given, it's instilled in all of us, whether we can name it or not, that right. longing is there.
Yeah.
But I think about, like, the stories that we hear of, like, you know, a young lady that's grown up without the love of a dad.
Mm.
That they're going to fill that void, you know, that longing some other way.
Yes, yes.
And I think that's what we do, if that makes sense, to equate it to our longing for God. It's like, it's in there. It's, it used to be this cheesy, I know this is hard to imagine, a cheesy Christian song, but cheesy Christian song in the 90s, it was like this.
Plum.
Something. I forgot about that.
That's the band name.
But a God-shaped hole.
Plum.
Something like that. Okay.
Yeah.
That,
they actually had some really good songs.
Yes, yeah.
That did. One was... Yeah, it was good back then.
The message,
yeah, the message was good. It was good back then.
Yeah,
but everybody grabbed onto that message and started using it over and over and over and over again.
Our apologies to Plum and to Steven Seagal. No, just to Plum. Don't worry about it. just to Plum. We appreciate your attempt.
But, I kind of had a little thing for the lead singer of Plum.
Okay,
when I was younger,
yeah,
like she was super cute.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I don't remember.
Yeah, she was hot.
Okay. But, you know, there is, I think that really is a truth, you know, that there is that, you know, hole that only he can fill. In fact, one of the greatest moments in ministry that I had, it was actually a younger child that I'd led to the Lord at, like, VBS. And, you know, she wanted to follow through with baptism. And, you know, of course, you know, you talk with them, just make sure, like, kind of understanding what's going on and everything. And I asked the young lady, I said, you know, can you explain to me what, you know, that night, you know, when you met Jesus, like, what that felt? And, like, she was not coached for it. I didn't tell parents. I mean, just asked the question. And she said, Mr. Keith, the only way I can explain it is I had a hole in my heart that's not there anymore. And I was like, man, that's beautiful. Yeah. Like, it's like, okay, yeah, counseling job done. Let's get you in the tank. You know, right. Like, you're right. You know, yeah, like it was beautiful. It was a beautiful moment. And, in fact, it's first baptism I ever did. Mm. And that was a memory I always have. And now she's an adult now, and that shows my age, but
yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Good stuff. Well, in this, you know, this need for security and the settlers being offered security by the sheriff, I found this interesting. He talks about the sheriff's tactics, and a little silly on some of the names, but again, this book was written in the 70s. So the sugar method, you know, that's the love and kindness that Jesus shows to draw you in, you know, almost a trap. The guilt method, making you feel guilty. And then the boot heel method, you know, this battle, it's talking about the fear of judgment, that if you don't get straight, you know, what you've got to face. And
yeah,
so either the loving kindness, the guilt trip, or the fear. And I'll be honest, that's still a lot of the tactics the church, not a particular church, but the Church of Jesus Christ uses. Absolutely. Today.
Yeah.
Let's get them in with the loving kindness. Let's don't talk about the, you know, the other parts of Jesus. Let's, you know, guilt them into giving more. Let's guilt them into doing more. Mm-hmm. Or let's just scare the hell out of them.
Yeah.
You know, literally.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, just talk about how painful and fearful it's going to be. And it's like, none of those are great ways to enter into relationship with God versus like that longing that we've talked about, that if we, you know, encourage people to understand that they were created for intimacy, created for relationship, all the way back to that garden moment, that, I mean, the loving kindness of a God that creates a people that he knows full well he's going to have to rescue in another way.
Yeah.
But he still gave us the choice to do it, and, and still draws the intimacy in of like in that moment to Adam and Eve of like, hey, it's not over.
Right.
Like, yeah, you messed up, but you haven't sealed the whole deal here. Like, yeah, there's grace.
Right.
I mean, Jesus has talked about in that beginning, you know, you talked about it, the one that, you know, would, you know, step on the serpent and it would bruise his heel and all this. And, you know, it's there. It was the plan. And even scripture says slain before the foundation of the world. It means that the rescue mission was planned before the creation ever happened.
Mm.
You know, that if we could get lost in that, I mean, and you can lay there, make your head hurt, you know, thinking about that stuff. But the love that a God, a creator God, has, that he just creates us knowing, yet, and I'm gonna have to go down and rescue these people.
Yeah.
But it's gonna be worth it.
Right.
I mean, that's an amazing, amazing thing. Well, on to pioneer theology. Jesus is the scout. And I love this quote. He says the scout, and just as opposite, I guess I should do this, is the tall, blonde, and handsome and all this, that this is a rough and rugged character, a man's man, you know, a little bit of a wildness to him. But it says that the scout, Jesus, rides ahead to find out which way the pioneer should go.
Mm.
How does that make you feel as a believer to know, you famously have talked about this in my life, about Jesus going ahead and behind, and him and his sin, and you know, some of the imagery God's giving you of that. But
Psalms 139. Yeah.
What does that mean to you?
Well, you know, Jesus in this book, represented as the scout, is he's a Jesus that I can trust, that I can feel safe with. You know, it's funny because you, people like these little communities. They like these little gated communities they can stay in and they can feel safe, you know. But if you get outside, I remember going to going on mission trips to other countries. I've only been to one. I went on one and I didn't like it, so I'm not going to probably won't go on another one. But I just remember
that was the one somebody got really sick on, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. A girl crapped her pants. It was hilarious.
But, she said she can handle that water. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, she said she could handle the tainted water.
Yeah.
And she drank the water.
Breaking news. It did not go as planned.
Oh, and she was wearing white pants when it happened. It was a bad deal.
Bad call.
I was 13. to me, it was hilarious.
Yeah, I was going to say, you laughed.
I did laugh.
Yeah.
I feel terrible about laughing.
Yeah.
But I did.
So, sorry, Plum. Sorry, lady on the mission trip. And Steven Seagal, you still suck. Our apologies to everyone but Steven Seagal. Anyway.
But here's what's interesting is when it was Belize, Central America, that I went to. There was a guy that was our guide, okay? Mm-hmm. And his name was, brace yourself, mm-hmm. Artemio Call.
Artemio. Okay.
Sounds it was like
Arsenio Hall.
He had a Belizean talk show. I'm just kidding. No, I'm kidding. But that was his name, Artemio Call.
Arsenio was a good show back in the day. I liked it.
I did too.
Yeah.
Artemio was a former gang member mm-hmm. in Belize who'd given his heart to Jesus. Mm-hmm. One of the most incredible guys I've ever met. I will always cherish that 2 mm-hmm. weeks that I spent with Artemio.
Yeah.
But you know, Belize, in this part of Belize, there's resort Belize mm-hmm. where it's safe and pretty safe, I guess. And unless you go to the outskirts to get yeah. your weed or something, but
right.
you know, it's resort town safe,
yeah.
you know. But then, just like Jamaica, is the same mm-hmm. deal.
Yep.
But once you get outside of that to the rural mm-hmm. areas, it's very unsafe.
Yeah.
But whenever I was with Artemio, like I didn't care. We'd go exploring, and we would go into parts of mm-hmm. the town we were close to. And there were some incidences where if he had not been with us, we would have been in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever I think about this sort of illustration about Jesus being the scout, I think about Artemio.
Mm.
And I think that's true with Jesus, because the Holy Spirit, Jesus, you know, interacts with us through the Holy Spirit. He, you know, in Acts, he says, I'm giving you my spirit as a helper to come, and he's going to lead you into all truth, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that spirit of Jesus is always going to lead us out.
Mm-hmm.
We can't, it's not stationary. That's why the institutional church, whereas it does have its strengths and, mm-hmm. and there are people that are finding Jesus in it, but it's never enough mm-hmm. for the believer, the growing believer. It just, at some point mm-hmm. it's never enough
mm-hmm.
because Jesus, the Spirit of Jesus, is always leading us out. He's always leading us into wildness. Now, it may be the wildness of our own story or of our own soul mm-hmm. at some point, but I think it always goes, you know, our friend who shall not be named mm-hmm. sold all his stuff and moved to a country, and now he's wanted in other countries.
Yeah.
And he'll tell you he did that because of the wildness of God, mm-hmm. that this Spirit of Jesus, this scout Jesus, went ahead and led him into that place. Not yeah. to say that God's going to do that with everybody, but
can we stop just a second and say that unnamed brother, we know he listens. We love you.
Yeah, we love We're you praying too, man. For you. Yeah, we are praying yeah. for you. But for me, whenever God has led me into something. Can I tell you a quick story?
Man, you about hey, when you got that mic, bro. You tell me anything you want.
I'm gonna tell you a quick story. There are probably two people, there's probably three or four people on the planet that know that this happened.
Mm-hmm.
The first time in my life when I felt the Spirit of God leading me mm-hmm. into a dangerous, I say dangerous, then it was.
Right.
Dangerous territory. Was when I was 16
mm-hmm.
years old.
In those Keeping It Real days.
Keeping It Real, man.
Jesse Crow.
West Blockton High School.
Yeah.
There was a kid, I'm not going to say his name, who was having a really hard time. Mm. And I saw this kid every day. And I would always interact with him, but he was super quiet. And we would talk, exchange pleasantries or whatever, and we ate lunch together
mm-hmm.
and So every day at lunch, there was a there were some kids that sat at the end of the, you had the, you remember the long row, the cafeteria tables where it's got the round seat.
Yep.
You know, this long stretch of tables. Well, these kids that sat at the end of that, close to the wall, and me and this fellow would sit kind of about midway down, and I would always try and talk to him and interact with him, and I didn't have a lot of friends either, and I didn't, you know, I was kind of a nerd or whatever, and so, well, every day those kids would throw stuff at him and pick on him, and I would always just like, man, don't worry about them, you know, and like me and him, you know, they would kind of give up on it. Well, one day I was sitting at home, and you know, the quiet time days, you know, you do your quiet time. Yeah. I would do my quiet time. I would get alone with God, and I'd have a book, whatever our youth pastor at the time was giving us to read through, or he would tell us to read this, or whatever, and I would read through it, and I would pray and stuff, and I felt the Spirit of God. And what about this guy? And I'm like, what? What, God? Like, what? Like, what do you want me to do? And I felt that burning. You felt that, right? That burning in your heart. And I'm like, well, maybe I should witness to him, you know?
Yeah.
And God was like, no, that ain't it. You know what it is. And I knew, God's like, you need to confront the people that are messing with him.
Yeah.
And I knew it in my heart. Now, these guys were bigger than me. Mm-hmm. They were much bigger than me.
Yeah.
And I, and I didn't do it the next day. Like, it was 2 days. I prayed and I struggled with this. But I knew, going back now, that's a familiar. It's not a guilt. That's what was interesting. It wasn't guilt. I don't even know how to describe it. It was like a, I don't say the word adventure, but it was like, it was a, God's calling me into a treacherous place. And guilt couldn't touch that. It was this weird fire that I had inside of me. And God was like, you need to confront that.
Yeah.
I'll be with you. You need to deal with it. So 2 days I prayed and I'm reasoning with God. And I'm like, God, I just don't know if I can do that. I don't know if, what if they hit me? What if they punch me?
Yeah.
And God was like, I'll be with you. Like, go into this.
Yeah.
And so this one particular day, I got up with this resolve, I'm doing it. Like, I'm going to say something. If they mess with him, they wouldn't mess with him every day.
Right.
But this particular day, I got up, God, if something happens, I will intervene in your name. I'll do it.
Yeah.
So that day was worse than the others. I didn't know this at the time, but some things had happened in his life that were very tragic. And he was going through some stuff at that point. I didn't know that till later on.
Yeah.
They started throwing stuff at him and messing with him. And they would, sometimes they would get him to walk down there and sit with him, and they would make jokes about him and like put their arm around, like they were kind of pretend like they're his friend, and say vulgar stuff about him with girls and stuff. And well, this particular day they're throwing stuff at him, and I was like, ah, like, and it got worse. Yeah. Well, he, it was much more intense that day, more than it had ever had been. So I get up, I can still feel the way I felt. God, it was like, I walked down, and the guy I said something to was about a foot taller than me. And I said, I don't remember what I said. It's not important, I guess. But I said, man, back off. Leave him alone. And I was shaking and stuff. And he goes, man, go sit down or whatever. And I got in his face, and he's sitting down and I'm standing up. I said, leave him alone. I'm pointing my finger in his face. I was like, if you got a problem with him, you got a problem with me.
Yeah, yeah.
He stands up. I'm looking up at that point. So I stand on the table. And at this point, I have the whole lunchroom staring at me. And I'm in his face, and I lose it. And it wasn't, I screamed, I cussed at him. That's, you know, back then you didn't do.
Right.
But I had, like, the fire of the Spirit of God had just exploded.
Yeah.
And Well, I just started. Well, the other guy never got up, and he looked, dare I say it, he looked frightened.
Right.
And at that point, I felt God with me. It was like just surrounded. Mm-hmm. It was incredible. And so I get worked up, and everybody's gathering around. It's like we're about to start throwing punches. And I felt an arm come around my chest and pick me up and carry me out of the lunchroom. Mm. And it was my best friend, Dustin. Mm. And he was like kind of laughing, mm-hmm. like kind of way to go kind of deal. Like, dude, what happened?
Right. You know?
And some of the teachers confronted me and said, you shouldn't have done that. Well, they sent us to the office, and, you know, I don't remember what happened, but he made me shake hands with the guy, mm-hmm. and I shook his hand. And so anyway, that was the first time, though, that I had ever, like, done that, you know, that I'd ever stepped out and walked with God into something. At the time, now that wouldn't have been dangerous. You know, I work at a high school. I have to confront students all the time, not all the time, but from time to time with, you know, I break up fights and stuff, you know. So it's like, but at that time for me, for 14-year-old Jesse Crow, that was terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, but that was the first time I'd ever walked with God into something like that. Like, and that was Jesus. Mm-hmm. That was not, you know, let's play sweet. Let's keep sweet. Let's don't, you know, rock the boat. Let's be nice. Let's be kind. Let's hand out our track, and let's not you know, ever say a cuss word or be bad. That was that Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was that. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
I didn't mean to go off.
No, that's an awesome story. You took me to one in my mind I hadn't thought about in a long time. In fact, there's probably a book on that shelf behind you that I had to read during it. But I had an experience in seminary. This would have been late 90s. And a missions class that I took, a workshop. I was actually a professor. I can still remember his name, Dr. Ken Taylor. And it was this very experiential workshop where it's like we had papers we had to write, we had all the busy work or whatever you want to call it, studies, but it was very you had to go on mission in New Orleans. That's where I went to seminary. I went to an extension center in Birmingham, but would go on campus as well. And one of the places we went was the Desire Projects in New Orleans, one of the roughest, you know, projects in all of America. And I just remember feeling like they told us, like, hey, it's a bad area. Mm-hmm. That's all we knew.
Yeah.
But I remember Dr. Taylor had been there many times.
Yeah.
People knew him. I go back to your story in Belize. Like, I just felt comfortable and never.
Right.
We get back to the classroom setting, and he says, well, he said, I just want you to know the block we were at today, and I forget, it was 1998 or whatever. Right. In 1997, led the United States in murders.
Whoa.
Like that block. And I was like, ooh, I am glad I did not know. Like, maybe Dr. Taylor wouldn't have been enough.
Yeah.
You know, in that moment. But it's so wild to see that represented in some of those stories. Which kind of goes to the next quote. I love this when Jesus as the scout, not just of which way the pioneers should go, but if you find yourself wanting to be a pioneer and not a settler, by the way, spoiler alert, that's what this book is getting at, that, mm-hmm. you know, settler theology is just that, settling and pioneering is about this adventure. But it says this, by observing Jesus, the pioneers learn what pioneering is all about.
Mm.
Yeah. I had some advice years ago that was so, I love this dichotomy of it. It was so profound, but yet so elementary. And the suggestion was, and I don't even remember, it was a small group I was part of. I think I know who it was, but as we were sitting around, someone encouraged the season that I was going on and says, have you thought about reading the Gospels? And my first thought was like, no. Like, I mean, I've read them a bunch. Mm-hmm. You know, I know all the stories. Like, why would I read that again? And the person was like, it just seems to me like you're really calling, like this is start of church at Southside or getting close to that time. You're really calling us to mimic the lives of Jesus. Like, wouldn't that be the best place to read? It's like, yeah, he's all in the Bible.
Yeah.
You know, we even said it, like he's on the first page, he's on the last page, like mm-hmm. everywhere in between that. The old saying, the scarlet thread that runs through Genesis to Revelation. But, like if you really want to know about Christ, like Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are the places to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when I did that, I just prayed. I started at Matthew and I said, Lord, will you let me read this like it's the first time?
Mm-hmm.
And I can't explain other than, feel led to say this, maybe that would be good advice for somebody listening today too. Like, mm-hmm. don't let the gospel not be the good news, but let it be old news.
Yeah.
And read it with that perspective of, let me catch the wildness and the unpredictability, the adventure, the toughness of Jesus, you know, all of these things that maybe get lost in that painting that we have in our mind.
Yeah.
Because I promise you, if you read it through that lens and ask the Spirit to walk with you, and maybe I would even encourage this, like, you know, don't set out and say, hey, I'm going to read all of Matthew tonight. Mm-hmm. Like, ingest it slowly.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, ask God, what do you have for me here?
Yeah.
And I promise you, it'll come alive, and you'll see things about Jesus like, whoa, like I never really was taught that, or I missed that.
And I think God really speaks the loudest mm-hmm. when we linger.
Oh, man.
You know,
one of the things that came about, like you've heard me teach on it before, but the thought that I had never picked up on, Jesus in the Gospels, and if I'm right, I may be wrong in this, but if I'm right, I can't think of a single instance that this happened.
Yeah.
Where Jesus got really, really angry or upset at a broken sinner.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Where he got upset was the ones who had the law memorized mm-hmm. and were missing him face to face.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, that's where he overturns tables. Now, yeah. I know there were other people in the crowd that were changing money and, you know, selling items and things like that. But when he has encounters where you hear him throw out, you brood of vipers, or you whitewashed tombs, or you cup that's clean on the outside but on the inside is dirty, you know, the whitewashed tombs that's like, yeah, it's clean on the outside but on the inside it's dead man bones. It's always addressed to the Pharisees.
Mm-hmm.
Who the people of the day would said, if anybody knows God, it's them. They got the law memorized. Yeah. Like the first five books of the Bible, they could quote.
Right.
Like you and I could quote Billy Madison. You know, like, I mean, that's where our knowledge goes, folks. So sorry about that. But, you know, they were the ones. And then Jesus even says something crazy. Not that he's crazy, but to the listener even back then.
Yeah.
Would have said, unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees, like you'll never enter the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
And it had to be people in the crowd that's like, well, I'm out then.
Right.
Like I don't have the law memorized.
Right.
But then you see encounters where this, like the widow's mite.
Yeah.
You know, where she goes up and puts two small copper coins that are like a tenth of a penny.
Yeah.
And he says, that woman, she right. gave everything.
Right.
You know, and then the other, the contrast of where they'd stand up like Bozo's grand prize game and just toss money into this, it's like a horn-shaped yeah. thing, and they'd throw and they'd glank, you know, clang and all this stuff, and they would try to draw attention. Look how much money I'm giving. And
yeah.
the way it was explained to me even in seminary was like today's math, if it's like if they went and changed a dollar bill to get 100 pennies,
yeah,
you know, so that it was more coins to throw.
Right.
You know, it was a show.
Yeah.
So they were giving more monetarily, but Jesus looks at somebody in the wildness of him and says, but that lady,
yeah,
that's what it's about.
Yeah.
And so it gets back to that Sermon on the Mount, that it's a heart, you know, and not just this outward.
I also love the fact that Jesus was, he didn't discriminate with rich or poor
mm-hmm.
when it came to the person's faith. Yeah. Like, because this, I think about the Chosen, because I just watched season four, the centurion, mm. who was a wealthy guy.
Yeah.
Who, he had it all. Mm-hmm. Had the nicest house, had the, yeah. you know, he had two, apparently, according to the Chosen, he had a wife on the side.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, or a girl on the side.
Right.
He had everything a man could want.
Mm-hmm.
But he comes to Jesus, and he's just broken.
Yeah.
And he says, look, you don't even have to come see him because I have this much faith that you're going to do it.
Even a sense of I'm not worthy to have you come in my house.
Yeah. Like, and it's like, that always struck me because Jesus was like, he really did not care what your station in life was. Because he looks at this guy and he was just awed by the guy's faith, you know? Yeah. And I just thought that, I just think that's pretty cool. That's like, he didn't, you know, it really does not matter.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
Right.
So if you want to be a pioneer, I would say read about the ultimate pioneer. You know, don't let the Gospels be old news. Maybe let that be something that heading into this new year that maybe you just strike up a relationship again with the Gospels and see how Jesus interacted. And here's one thing you'll see, another quote that's from the book. I've actually got a couple more and then we'll close out today. But Jesus the Scout is always ready for adventure. Always.
Yeah.
Underline that word always in my book. But this is kind of where I really kind of wanted to close out because there's two quotes here. The call to move out, come hell or high water, is always disturbing. And then he says this, something disturbing about the scout. You see, there's a settler hidden in even the bravest pioneer. That even if you're listening today and say, well, man, I've listened now. This is the third week I've listened to this breakdown of this compare and contrast of this book. And it's like, I find myself more in that pioneering. Just know this, there's still a settler in there somewhere.
Yeah.
That needs, you know, that adventure, that needs to, okay, let me recenter and get back and not try to do this on my own.
Right.
Jesse and I've talked a lot with our work sometimes that we don't invite God in, you know, to that place. It's like, I'm settled into the rules and handling that myself. But,
right.
You know, if you truly want to be, you know, a pioneer that's walking with Jesus, there's still some settler ways and probably will be until the day you die.
Right.
That we constantly have to, you know, not in a sense of duty, obligation, following the rules, but like just for intimacy's sake.
Right.
Of like, hey, will you, you know, push some of that back again? Like it's welling up. Like even, I find myself even with what we do now on Sundays, and you know, many will look at us and we've had conversations where the, you know, it's, you and I don't view it this way, but they view it as a bragging on us kind of way of what we're doing. Man, I wish I could do that. And it's like, you know, all credit to God on that. It's his calling. But even with it being something that many would consider pioneering, and it is in some ways, it still can become that settler thing of just we've settled in to, well, this is just what we do.
Right.
But I still go back to those initial feelings of adventure.
Yeah.
You know, when God called us in, and I have to remind myself, it's still an amazing thing of what's happening in our midst, even though it becomes kind of routine.
Yeah.
But what do you think about that? That there's a settler in all of us. Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
Wes, on that.
Well, and I think that you sort of you have to reorient. You have to reorient often. And that's why, again, that goes back to the intimacy thing. It's like, if we have an encounter with God and God leads us in this, you know, in this great adventure or whatever, and we see our heart change and see all these things change, you see this a lot of times, especially with younger Christian folk, is like, then they'll kind of dial it back, get back into their life, and it's like, it's back to normal kind of thing. And they may pray, you know, every day, but it's not. So that's why we have to reorient. Yeah. We have to reorient every day. Come back to Jesus. Give him our lives. Give him our hearts. You know, the prayers we pray, give you everything, everyone. I give you my spirit, soul, and body, heart, mind, and will. You know, so there has to be this reorientation where we go, okay, you know, my life is super, super structured today, super normal. Work is this, work is that. You know, it's the same old, it's the mundane. So, God, where are you in this?
Yeah.
Like, what are you leading me into today? And again, the heart of a man, the heart of a woman is vast. You know, it has its own frontier, right?
Yeah.
And so typically when God has us, which most of us are in our day to day, it gets mundane. It gets kind of boring, or it gets business as usual. And then, you know, some of us out there like what we do, and it's, you know, but it's, and some of us don't. Some of us are, you know, in jobs that we, you know, we're trying to get by, trying to get to a point where we can retire or whatever. But it's in those, in that mundane, where we have to lock in to the Spirit of God. Mm-hmm. There has to be time where we reengage, where we reorient. And God, what do you have today? Where are you leading me today?
Right.
And I think that is, you know, I do believe that God is always, there is always more. Somebody told me that one time when I had this encounter with God, and I was like, man, I was telling this person, I was like, man, I feel like every time God reveals something to me about myself or about someone else, but usually about myself, it's like, I thought we were kind of not done, but like, it's like, but there's always more.
Yeah.
That's what we have to remember. That's why intimacy is important. That's why reorientation with the Spirit of God is important. That's why time with God, time spent with God, silence, solitude, reading, prayer, fasting. That's why all of those things are so important to keep that part of us that blazes the trails, that stays on the frontier, that doesn't turn back to settler life. It's so important to engage with God in that way and through those things, through those spiritual disciplines, because it's all about reorientation. It's all about staying with Jesus. Like, don't, like, you know, I can imagine him coming, don't set up camp here. We're not staying here. We're going to keep moving.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's more. There's more down the trail. I've been up. I've seen it, you know? So, that's what I would say. It's like, and I'm saying that to myself, because that's easy. Past couple of days, is my time with God has been kind of hit or miss, because we've had a lot going on. And I have spent time with God, but it's like this morning, the past two mornings, I've had to do it on long drives because I haven't had time to, you know, or hadn't made time, really. I think everyone can make time, but I mean, it's about reorientation. It's about reengaging with God, and it's, you know, and that's an easy thing to do, but it's also very difficult because it doesn't require much of you in terms of, like, you don't have to go to your mass and pray and talk to the priest. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to. There's nothing you have to do in terms of like physically, but it's more about mental engagement with God. And anyway, I don't know if I'm making any sense, but
no, that's great. So I would say to the listener, then we've mentioned a couple of ways that you can reengage or reorient, if you want to use those words, reading, praying, you know, going back to the Gospels, all this stuff. But better than listening to two yahoos like us, we would encourage you to pray. Ask the Father, like, hey, how can I do that? Like, because your heart, your life story, your experiences are different than ours, and that's the beauty of walking with God, is that He will speak directly to your heart, let you know, like, hey, here's what I want you to do. Here's how I want to spend time with you today.
Right.
And so encourage you with that. I've got one last thought, and we'll close with this, and be back with chapter 4. Coming up soon, and excited to do that. But Jesse, you mentioned the word trailblazer, and that's the last quote I got, that he is the ultimate pioneer, the ultimate trailblazer, the scout. And, you know, I love, this is definitely something that's straight out of Scripture, even though it's in Western, Old West terms. But those that long to see God. There's been many people ask, you know, Moses, just let me, you know, have your glory pass by, you know, and like, even just the backside of God, he has to come down off the mountain with a veil, you know, on his face. But us in the church age, you know, as if with unveiled faces, the word says, reflect his glory. But going back to last week's podcast, the term for God in a pioneering way is the trail boss. And it says that if you have seen the scout, you've seen the trail boss, that Jesus is that representation of who God is. And so if you want to see God, if you want to meet God, then by all means, the way to that is through the scout. It's to find Jesus. He is the way, the truth, and the life. And so if you want to meet God, see God, that's the door that we enter. It's faith in him. It's the pressure's off you. It's nothing that you can do.
Right.
His grace is enough. And so that's the way we enter in. And man, it's a beautiful life. It's a life of adventure and callings and all these things that really, if we walk with him, there's never a dull moment. And I think Jesse and I would both tell you, even with us sitting here with a mic and a podcast, we do not always do that perfectly. Constantly confess to one another of ways that we're not walking with God in areas. And so I would encourage that as well. Find you a friend, and hopefully you found that here where it's an outlet for your faith, but also people that walk with you. Pray about who you can be honest with, because you can't with everybody.
You can't. All right.
But seek wisdom and counsel from God and the Holy Spirit on that. And, you know, share some intimate conversations of struggles and victories and all those things, because it definitely makes life easier. So hope that you found that here as well, and you can always reach out to us, but definitely those that walk with you in your daily life, seek out some of those, and we'll be back with more of this. So thank you for joining us, and we love you guys, and we'll see you next time.